Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, time for another toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky, owner of a new radio show in the Bay Area. We can still call it new, right?
What's that?
We can still call it new, right?
Yeah, just a couple weeks in, the pregame show.
How's that?
Catch me live, 5 to 6 a.m. weekdays.
How's that new sleep schedule going?
It's weird, man. I'm trying to get into it. Training my roommate who plays the drums not to practice between like 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. I can feel my body adjusting to this new rhythm. It's just a matter of time before I'm settled in.
So you're doing a 5 a.m. show.
Yeah.
You kind of get if there's any advantage to it, right? You get the first shot it takes in a day, right?
First crack, son. And that, that is both exciting and also exciting from a perspective of opportunity and exciting for me, from a perspective of challenge, because I think most people are like this, but I find my easiest moments of like generating takes and fresh ideas is through talking to people. And so the challenge of like at the end of every night or early in the morning going through what's happening and being like, all right, how do I think about this? What's a different angle for this? How can I approach this in an interesting way? That's been fun.
So you still feel the pressure to do like a unique angle, even though none of the angles are taken, essentially, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, unless you're an idiot, if you've worked in this business for, God, however long, I mean, I'm well over a decade now, and I've been listening to sports radio since I was six, what the, like, corners are going to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know where the corners live, especially today when there's so many takes that, like, it's like there's like now a relevant sample size of takes to like firmly establish take streets that people live on. You know, it didn't used to be like that. Takes were a little more random when there's only like 17 of them total. But now that there's thousands and you can lump takes into like groups and philosophies and you pretty much know where the broad ones are going to stand. And that doesn't mean you never have an opinion on that. I mean, part of my job is to share my opinion broadly held or otherwise. But sure, I'm trying to come up with something that, you know, might not otherwise get thought of during the course of the day.
It'd be fun for somebody on the internet to try to like, I don't know, you know, sit on someone else's street and just come up with parody takes of their takes, like a little bit before the takes come out. You know what I mean? Like just try to beat Clay Travis to his takes, you know?
Don't you think you could? Or like Skip Bayless?
Yeah, no, I think you could. That's why I think somebody could make some funny money doing that.
To be fair, I think people do on Twitter. Like if you just watch Twitter, especially around basketball, if you watch Twitter around basketball or football, you will see people tell you somebody like Skip Bayless's takes before they happen. In fact, he might not even have to generate that stuff on his own anymore. He might just sit back and troll Twitter for the dumbest stuff that looks like him.
Might be true. I don't know. I feel like Clay Travis take generator. There's some money there.
Maybe. Clay Travis is definitely one of those guys who like
has a corner.
He has a corner, but I will say, because I have actually heard a fair amount of Clay Travis recently, because he's on at 3 a.m. Local time when I'm on my way into work.
His corner is certainly a gated community. That's where his street lies, for sure.
That's true, and that does make him broadly predictable, but I'll say, like, he's not a dumb guy.
No, he's not a dumb guy.
And actually, in his own pig-headed and often stubborn and obnoxious way, he can be rather thoughtful. So I actually think a Clay Travis take generator would be a lot tougher than a Skip Bayless take generator. I think what you're imagining as a Clay Travis generator is actually a Clay Travis listener take generator.
Maybe. That's just...
Because the people
nearly
who
identical
love
to the
Clay
clan,
Travis,
clan sports feed.
Right. They've got a corner that they are like fenced in on. Yeah. They don't know the way off of. Yeah. But Clay Travis actually, although he's going to end up being moderately right-wing and trolly about everything, he actually is cleverer than you'd imagine, given that description.
All right. Well, that was more of a defense of Clay Travis than I was expecting at the top of the show.
Well, I'm not defending his positions or personality, but as a radio host, he's not bad.
We are we're going to get out of the Clay Travis cul-de-sac. And
more street puns, please.
While we're here, should we check in on my NFL viewing habits real quick?
Ah, yeah. Seems like a perfect tie-in.
Yeah.
How's it going? Did you watch any NFL this past weekend?
Well, I did. This was the weekend that I designated preseason as the...
Oh, because you went to a game?
I went to a game.
What a game.
I went to... an exceedingly strange game, at least from a spread standpoint, the biggest NFL upset in many, many, many years. And I had a grand old time. Most of the people around me did not.
I bet.
It was very surprising. But we got field passes, so I went down on the field. And really,
hopefully you went before the game.
Before the game, yes. We were in the Bills end, so it would have been okay. Either way. But I just, the big story right now is this Everson Griffen thing, and right. I don't want to speculate on, okay, I do want to speculate, that's a lie, but it just, it's another one where, and I'm not criticizing Everson Griffen in any way, shape, or form. It sounds like he has some real problems.
Sounds like he is mentally ill.
Yeah.
In some way, or having some sort of psychotic break of some kind.
It's just hard not to wonder if his chosen career
related.
Path, yeah, has at the very least exacerbated whatever problem may have existed, if not caused it.
Or at the very least failed to adequately treat.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because that's the thing with the NFL is like, what they have shown with consistent, well, a number of dumb things, but one awful thing that they have shown with consistency is that there's no morality whatsoever. So anything they do that even has a slight odor of taking care of players is purely self-motivated. They will not hesitate to sacrifice the well-being of a player for team or league gain if they don't believe it will come back to bite them. And so even though you and I know very little about the specifics of the Everson Griffen situation, which for those who know nothing, essentially is he was erratic and made violent threats at a hotel.
Against others and also himself. He's been very paranoid.
Right, and essentially was put on a psychiatric hold at a certain point. And even though we know very little about the details, it's hard not to at least consider the possibility that either the Vikings or the NFL were negligent in addressing whatever issues he's having when it reaches the sort of incident level that it did.
Yep.
How can you not at least consider that given all of the past mistakes the NFL has made in that department? And that's probably, as you said, Well, it's certainly a shame. It's probably unfair to both Everson Griffin and some other of the people involved in this, but it's inevitable. You can't not consider it given the history.
It's honestly, this care, this general sort of lack of care of the players is the thing that really bothers me the most about the league, more than any of the political stuff. It just seems so indecent, and it's frustrating to me.
It is indecent.
You hear the kind of talk when Le'Veon Bell holds out, or when Vontae Davis retires at halftime, about how selfish these guys are and this and that and blah blah blah, and I'm like, there's no loyalty coming back to these players, and yet we expect them to be loyal to these uniforms.
Well, I do think those are separate conversations. Like, the Le'Veon Bell thing, I'm with you. He doesn't owe the Steelers bupkis, and he should hold out and protect his body if he feels like he needs to get his money, because we all know for 100% certain if he showed up and the Steelers thought it was his last year in that uniform, they would run him right into the ground without a moment's hesitation. So if he feels it's financially viable and a good approach to hold out and wait until the last moment he has to come back, God bless. Vontae Davis walking out on his teammates at halftime of the wrong end of a blowout, to me, that's kind of like, come on, bro.
Dudes
that you play alongside, you couldn't wait. Even if you're hurt, you could take yourself out of the game, but like, respect the other guys that are going out there putting their bodies on the line enough not to create a scene by literally getting in your car at halftime.
I mean, I hear that. I just think anyone who decides that I am not supposed to be out there anymore.
No, 100%. You don't want to be on the field. I agree.
And that going out there when you feel that way,
it's dangerous.
To me, is more likely to endanger those people. Now, look,
absolutely.
Could he have, I guess, sort of, handled it better in terms of providing the information to people that he was leaving? I guess, could he have watched the second half in street clothes? I suppose. But I just, this
Come on,
stuff about
just,
how gross he is, like, I'm not here for that.
I don't know about gross, but I do think it shows, questionable character as a teammate, for whatever that's worth.
I
don't know what that means to the real world, but I completely agree with everything you said, physically speaking.
I just think that's some sports bullshit, and I don't know. I'm sure people will question my manhood for that, but whatever.
No. I agree with the injury, the physical stuff, and the mental decision-making as far as playing another down. The minute you feel in your brain, I'm not supposed to be out there anymore, by all means, you go to your coaches, your teammates, whoever needs to know, and you say, listen, man, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. My mind's not right. I'm out. But to sort of quietly pack up, hop in your car at halftime, and drive off?
Well, I think that might be an I don't want to get into too far.
It's
the
a marginal exaggeration. He told like one. He told his position.
He told his coaches.
Coach,
yeah. So I like Anyway.
But come on. You don't have the respect for the dudes. Because again, there's a bunch of guys getting blown out. Do you really think he would have left the scene if it was a close game?
Kind of sounds like it. Yeah. But I don't know. I could
be
wrong about
that. I don't know if I buy that.
By the way, the same thing happened in the Tennessee Florida game to one of the Tennessee players this week. So I don't know. Maybe it's going around.
I'm not against guys stopping playing the moment they feel like they want to. I just feel like, from a basic teammate respect perspective, to literally drive away at halftime is kind of a dick move.
We didn't even get into the NFL talking about changing the roughing the quarterback rules on the fly, and how like, oh. I don't, you know, that's
it's
a whole nother
perfect
avenue. Here, this is just because this was supposed to be a quick point.
Yeah.
It's like this stuff just doesn't happen in any other professional sports league. Like, no one is talking about changing the rules on the fly. No one is talking about how these people legitimately don't care for the health and safety of their employees. This is specific to the NFL, these conversations. Are they not?
Absolutely. And the second one, I don't know if that's exactly true. Like, the health part comes in because the NFL is the most dangerous major sport in our country.
When was the last time
baseball changed
the rule mid-season?
No. Hold on. I'll get to the rule change thing. In terms of the caring about the players, that's a conversation we have in most sports. To varying degrees.
Like the well-being? I'm not talking about the financial well-being. I'm talking about the, like, physical well-being of
their employees. Physical well-being of guys in other leagues is much less at risk. But do we really think, for instance, James Dolan cares about someone who sustains a knee injury in training camp and never gets to play again if he doesn't owe them guaranteed money? Like,
I think he cares
somewhat.
I would say let's take a look at what the Rockets at least attempted to do for Royce White, who wound up never playing for them, versus what the NFL does for Everson Griffin.
Well, okay, but also, you know, the Steelers are taking great care of Ryan Shazier, so it depends. But I'm just saying, generally speaking, I don't think many sports ownerships care desperately for the well-being of their players. It's just very few major sports are as physically and mentally dangerous as football.
I would disagree with the first part of that. I think both those things are true.
But anyway. That being said, the bigger point about rules is you're absolutely right. Nobody would change rules midstream, but it's the perfect microcosm for what happens with these rules every offseason in the first place. Everything the NFL does, from domestic violence policy to catch rule to celebration rules to quarterback roughing rules, it's all reactionary and poorly considered and ill-conceived.
Right, hastily implemented.
Exactly. And that's the problem. It's the classic problem of – it's why the NCAA rulebook is a convoluted mess, and it's the same thing with the NFL rulebook. It's you built a shaky foundation that you continue to repair shakily over and over and over again until you have this ungainly, irresponsible, poorly thought out mess. And that's my thing. I am actually planning on doing 10 minutes on this tomorrow on the radio. Is it's not everyone. We go through these yearly panics. Oh, roughing the passer is going to ruin the game. Oh,
we don't know what a catch is.
Right, that's going to ruin the game. Failure to understand and handle concussions is going to ruin the game. No, it's not any individual thing. It's that in their response to each of these things, the NFL is reactionary and ill-prepared and poorly considered. And the more shoddy planks you build on top of this shoddy edifice, the closer you get to utter collapse. Whenever it ends up happening, is it going to be that one beam that ends up breaking it? No, because it's this bizarre Jenga tower of idiocy.
Jenga tower of idiocy. All right, well played, sir. I suggest you reuse that one on the pregame show there.
Noted.
All right, let's get into the world of entertainment, shall we?
Do we want to mix in the basketball now or save that for the end?
We can mix it in now, I guess.
You did want to get into your local team.
The trick part is we're taping this on a Tuesday morning, and whatever we say is pretty subject to breaking news. So who knows where we'll be at?
Okay, I think we can safely say the risk of breaking news is that Jimmy Butler will actually be traded. And I don't care. Like, the conversation about, like, how good is the team he's traded to and how good are the Timberwolves now that they've let him go. That to me is a conversation that is for later.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my question in this. Do you think, because he's certainly being painted that way here, and that's to be expected, I guess, because we're the jilted lovers in this case. But do you believe that Jimmy Butler is a bad dude, I guess, you know, or behaving badly, I should say, in this situation?
No, not badly. I think he's behaving like NBA superstars who want to take agency over their careers behave.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the cost of doing business with superstars. And frankly, I can't tell you, okay? Like, I think we have to assume a lot of reporting around these sorts of issues has to be taken with a grain of salt. And I think certainly some of the problem here is the attitudes of Wiggins and Towns, who are just less intense guys than Jimmy Butler. That being said, this team, when healthy, was the third best team in the West last year. And
yeah,
hold on.
Sorry, people overblow that though, because they were third in the West, but by like a game and a half. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was pretty jumbled together in that pack.
Yeah, but they were really picking up steam. And again, it's their first year together as a trio, and those two guys are both very young still. Like, I don't totally buy that this thing was doomed from, you know, the end of last season. I think this is a Tom Thibodeau issue. I don't think Jimmy Butler can sit there for an offseason and watch you try to rebuild the 2011 Chicago Bulls with not just the same type of guy that you brutalized with too many minutes half a decade ago, but literally the same guys who were brutalized, and expect that to be the thing that turns this from a team with potential that needs a kick in the pants to a true Western Conference competitor.
All right.
I don't think Jimmy Butler is living in a vacuum. I think he sees these things and he's thinking, you got to be kidding me. And beyond that, I think he is dissatisfied with the response he's getting from Towns and Wiggins in terms of intensity. And I guarantee you, if Jimmy Butler is upset with those things, that Thibodeau is as well.
Okay, so I disagree with you on this.
Really?
Yeah. I do not think it's a Thibodeau issue.
Really?
I think that the efforts to surround Jimmy Butler with the 2011 Bulls was literally about making Jimmy Butler happy and comfortable.
Wow.
And I think that the problem here is Timberwolves ownership. Specifically, this is an Andrew Wiggins problem in that Andrew Wiggins got all the money and Andrew Wiggins is not very good. And that Andrew Wiggins is a talented player who doesn't provide a lot of value beyond some scoring ability. And that's a very specific kind of scoring ability because he's not a particularly good spot-up shooter or off-ball wing or any of the things that you sort of need to have spacing in the current NBA. And he's a zero on defense. But once
the
Wolves committed all this money to him, right, that – just that in and of itself locked down the certain amount of money that they could offer Jimmy Butler, who's trying to get the most money possible. Plus,
well, that's not
now,
true.
Now, but it is true because, right, they offered him, the Wolves offered him in the offseason the max amount of money that they could offer him, but he could make more by being a free agent next year or waiting.
That's not
so
true.
That is true.
No, they can offer him a max.
Next year. Next year they can offer him a max. They offered him the most they could offer him this year. So,
right, but
and he
makes
take
more
it.
Money staying with them and re-signing
or
than
getting,
any other option.
Unless he gets traded. So that's
well,
where
right,
we're at.
But my point is, like, this is not an issue where there's more money elsewhere. If it was just about money, he could stay there
yeah,
and make
but
as
it's,
much
it's
as
not,
anywhere.
It's not just about the money that Butler gets. It's about the resources available once he's here, right? They're all committed to two players he doesn't care for. And it'd be one thing if it was Towns, you know.
But that's also Thibodeau.
No, I don't think it was Thibodeau. I think that's Glenn Taylor. I think you're putting Glenn Taylor's thing on on the basketball side. No one thought this the Wiggins extension was a good idea when it happened. It looks like a terrible contract now. They're going to have no luck getting out from under it.
At the time, people thought they didn't really have a choice. Nobody thought it was a brilliant deal, but a lot of people said they don't really have a choice. And again, it doesn't – Wiggins' contract does not directly affect Butler. And frankly, no matter what you had signed Wiggins to, with the amount you're paying Towns now with his extension and the amount you'd have to pay Butler – the three of them were going to bust you anyway. So it was always going to be bits and pieces after the three of them.
If you're gonna have bits and pieces after the three of them, then the three of them have to be good. All three of them, right?
That's right. But again, I don't think...
One of them is like a barely above average NBA player.
How old do you think Andrew Wiggins is?
He's not old. I get it. But
how old do you think he is?
I think he is like, I don't know, 23?
Exactly. He's 23 years old. So I agree. There's work to do. But guess what's not going to happen wherever Jimmy Butler gets traded to? Immediately have two players as good as Cat and Wiggins.
I disagree with that.
Really?
Where does that happen? I disagree with
that. The Nets?
I think that, look, you're not going to find too many teams that he's going to go to with players as good as Cat. Andrew Wiggins, and this is the problem. You can say Andrew Wiggins is 23 years old, and we don't really know yet. The problem is that Andrew Wiggins' debut season was 2014-15, right? He played significant minutes in those seasons, right? He played all 82 games in those seasons. He is not a better player in 2018-19 than he is in 2014-15. So that's the problem. And so you can't. It's hard to say. Well, he's 23 years old. You know, think about it. The potential when 4 years in the league and you're not seeing any improvement. So
yeah, I mean, I think you did see improvement his first couple years. Last year was a regression, but I don't think that's shocking, given that last year was his first year playing alongside Jimmy Butler, who took away a lot of the opportunities he was getting. So. I think you are exaggerating the death of Andrew Wiggins as a basketball player, and I just don't totally believe that.
Honestly,
again,
if anything, I think I'm underplaying the death of Andrew Wiggins as a basketball player.
Wow. Okay.
I can't even watching this guy is so it's exceedingly frustrating. He is not good. He's not good. Never mind, great. He's not good.
I don't think that's accurate. He's not what he could be, but I don't think it's accurate to say he's not good.
Okay.
And again, regardless of where exactly we rate Andrew Wiggins, I just don't believe that when last season's playoff run ended, this was an irreparable situation, which it appears to be now, given that Thibodeau's taken four or five cracks at Butler and he doesn't seem to be changing his mind or showing up to media day. So, in my mind, I don't see how you can imagine that the way the Wolves handled the offseason didn't factor in.
Yeah. I'm not saying that the Thibodeau's done everything right, but I think Thibodeau's belief, I think it's still the right belief, is that the best play is to try to salvage it. I think that the idea of taking 50 cents on the dollar or 35 cents on the dollar for Jimmy Butler is ultimately crippling to the team, you know.
Of course. No, he's doing the right thing trying to repair the relationship, but yeah. I don't think he broke it.
Yeah, I see, but I don't, you think he broke it? Or do you think,
I do.
Do you think Cat and Wiggins broke it?
I think it's a triple threat.
I don't know.
I'm not saying Cat and Wiggins weren't involved. I'm just saying, well, first of all, at some level, Cat and Wiggins failing to bring a level of effort that gets Jimmy Butler locked in is also a Thibodeau issue.
I guess. Are you saying he wasn't intense enough?
Maybe he's too intense. Have we ever considered that,
possible,
given that he's had problems everywhere he's gone with overplaying guys, and that almost everywhere he's been, some guys have responded to that overplaying with a lack of consistent intensity? Like, this is not new.
Can I just suggest, and I'm not trying to invalidate anything that you're saying.
You can't make this a bias thing because...
But that if Tom Thibodeau was the exact same guy with the exact same team, did the exact same things in Phoenix, your commentary for him might not be as sharp. I'm not saying that what you're saying is without merit. I'm just saying that there's a little bit of an edge to it because it happened for your team.
That's what I'm saying. Well, actually, man, Tom Thibodeau is the best coach my team has had probably since Phil Jackson. Here's the thing. I think it's because, first of all, because he's dangerous to players, and also because the NBA has really moved past a lot of the nonsense he's engaged in. Not the least of which is being GM and coach at the same time. We've seen it's just not feasible. How's Detroit doing?
Yeah, look, I'm not saying the man's perfect. The offense they run is antiquated. Like, I'm not
all this stuff. So there's, but that's all it is.
The guy shows up and they're, you can't talk about how they were third in the West without giving at least some of the credit to that for him. You know what I mean?
I should be clear. I think he's one of the great basketball minds in the game. I don't think there's any question about that. And I actually think, even though it's an antiquated offensive system, like, he used it because it fit the talent, theoretically.
Right.
And it worked when the talent was healthy. So, like, I think he's a pretty great basketball mind, and he's a good basketball coach. But he's so bad at all the other parts of the job he has right now that – ultimately, it's to the detriment of not only wins this year, every year, but the franchise and the players' futures.
Yeah, everybody sort of is a little problematic here. I'll certainly concede that, except maybe Jimmy Butler. I mean,
he's exercising the power he has earned.
Yeah. And cannily, I would add.
Yes, to me. And I have no problem with that.
And this is, Simmons coined the term. It's probably one of the smartest things he's done the last couple of years, is that term pre-agency.
Yes, that's what this is. You have leverage, and you're using it. God bless.
Yep. I think you're going to see more and more superstars do this. By the way, this is another way that LeBron James has transformed this league, right? And he took so much crap for it, you know, when he made the decision, and we don't have to get into the optics part of that. But that was a transformative moment for players in that league because they started to realize their power could really give them the ability to author their own futures, you know, and their own legacies. And you're just going to see more and more players take advantage of it.
I will say... like, since LeBron wanted to give all the blame for creating super teams to Kevin Durant, he should probably give some of the credit to this for to him as well.
it's probably true. All right.
That's just more example of LeBron being a savvy operator from a PR perspective.
I think the NBA is going to be setting up to be tremendously fun this year. I don't know where Butler eventually lands. I don't know how much of an impact it's going to have on that, just given the teams that he's talking about going to.
Well, I mean, I'll say this.
Possible exception of Miami. I feel like maybe he could turn Miami into a contender in the East.
Well, I don't know about contender, but I think...
Finals contender, don't you think? Or you think they have no chance to challenge the Celtics with Butler?
The Celtics, Toronto, and the Sixers, I think, are so far ahead of the rest, unless somehow he got to the Bucks. Everyone else is so far ahead of the rest of the East that I don't see finals contender. Hmm. But that being said, after the top six, I was looking at this today, actually. After the top six in the East, it's such a pile of trash that I think he makes almost anybody a playoff team. Like, just here's how I see it. Top three, Celtics, Raptors, Sixers. Right? I think that's a pretty clear tier. Next three, Bucks, Pacers, Wizards. And then after that, the Heat, the Bulls, the Hornets, the Pistons, the Magic.
Are we sure the Wizards are better than the Heat?
No. I'm pretty sure the Bucks and Pacers are.
Okay.
And the Wizards certainly should be, man.
I'd put the Heat in that group with the Bucks and the Pacers.
All right, but even if you do, the eighth playoff spot, you're looking at the Bulls, Hornets, Pistons, Magic.
It's ugly. Yeah,
and then, like, if he's on the Nets or Cavs,
we just know not the Hawks. Just not the Hawks. This is what we know.
Well, but the Hawks wouldn't make the deal because they are trying to stink. And the Knicks won't make the deal.
No, I just meant for that eighth playoff spot. It's just not the Hawks. It could be anybody else.
And you know what? It's probably not. It's probably not the Knicks, Cavs, or Nets either.
But it's a good chance that it'd be somebody who's not trying because that's fine.
Right. Because we don't even think Porzingis is going to play this year for the Knicks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, they're bad.
And they're not going to make this deal. So the Hawks and Knicks are probably out. The Cavs and Nets, unless they trade for Butler, are pretty definitely not going to the playoffs. But Bulls, Hornets, Pistons, Magic, none of them are super exciting. All of them could be the eighth best team in the East.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see the Wizards now they've caught Dwight Bola, how that goes.
Yeah, I think it could work out well for them. For once, he's, I think, being taken in as what he is rather than as some aspirational Dwight Howard.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's jump into the worlds of entertainment.
It's still a virus. I'm not arguing that.
Let's get into some TV. Because I think we could talk about Maniac on Netflix real quick. For those of you who didn't catch us talking about this last week, this is the new show from Cary Fukunaga with Jonah Hill.
And, who, I guess, Cary Fukunaga is doing Bond? Did I read that?
I think that is correct. Are we Googling this?
did you hear the typey types?
Yeah.
Hold on. It's unclear. Yeah, he is the new director. Yes, of I guess the new last Daniel Craig Bond movie.
Well, congrats to him. Cary Fukunaga, if you're not familiar, of course, made his sort of bones or his name on the first season of True Detective. The one you liked, basically.
Right. Well, and he's also directed a couple of.
I wasn't trying to give his whole filmography. I'm just saying what he's best known for. Beast of No Nations, I think.
Yeah, that was sort of his big breakthrough, I think.
I am. You've watched two episodes of this, right?
Yeah, I believe it's two, maybe three. I can't remember for sure.
I am thoroughly confused.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I think we start with where and when would you imagine this takes place? How would you describe the setting of this show?
A near slightly dystopian future?
Or is it maybe even a concurrent but slightly off and off-putting timeline? Like,
well, it's clearly jumping around some timelines, it seems like, right?
No, but I mean in terms of just like the main plot exists in a place that does have clearly some technology that by our standards would be advanced, but also some technology that by our standards would be not advanced, right? So like maybe this is just one of many alternative timelines. Because they do mention in one of the voiceovers the concept of alternative timelines.
Right. Well, this is one of my things, right? So you've got this alternative timelines. You've got people in a pharmaceutical trial. And you've got a main character who may or may not have schizophrenia, right? So we're sort of back to this unreliable narrator sort of situation that, as you know, I'm just not crazy about. And it seems to be spreading where it's just really hard to know if the thing that you're watching is real or a product of the mind. And I feel like it's just kind of an easy manipulative trick that screenwriters and directors are putting upon us.
I hear you, but I don't know that I think that is that In some ways, I feel like that's kind of like a cheap way to... It's like a reductive view of these shows, is it not?
A reductive view of... I'm not saying that the whole show is unreliable narrator. I'm talking about this as a trend. So, of course, it's by nature a reductive view.
No, but I mean, I don't know that, like, unreliable narrator shows is even, like, a genre of shows or anything.
No, it's a trend across, spreading across many genres of shows, and I'm not into it.
Right, okay. I mean, I hear you, but
it's a trope. That's what it is. It's a trope.
Yeah, but it's handled so differently in different... I don't know. It doesn't bother me, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's the difference. It doesn't bother you.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's say this, then. Putting aside your inherent objection vis-a-vis unreliable narrators, it's... I don't even... Okay. Maybe that's why it's confusing. I'm not sure I would say that's why it's confusing. Would you?
No. I'm not putting it on that. I'm just thinking it's just part of the mix in this confusing stew. Don't you think? I think more than confusing. Like, doesn't this show feel a little obtuse? You know what I mean?
Maybe. I feel like that remains to be seen. I mean, like, there are certain things that remain to be seen. And look, we've said this about a lot of shows we've watched, like. 5 episodes into Sharp Objects, there was a point at which we were like, you know, if this doesn't come together in some meaningful way, it's going to be a lot of time we wasted.
Yeah, well, that's another show where I feel like the unreliable narrator aspect of it took a little bit of a toll in terms of my enjoyment of the show as a whole.
Were you not pretty satisfied at the end, though? I feel like when we talked about it, we were both pretty satisfied.
Again, I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy the show. What I'm saying is I would have enjoyed it more if the narration had been a little bit more stable.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I guess it's easy then for us to conclude that there is a version of this show that you would enjoy more. That being said, I feel like you've kind of enjoyed what you've watched so far.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah, no, I'm not out. You know, like it's a really visually interesting show.
Yes,
there's a tremendous cast,
and that cast is making interesting choices.
Yes,
and I don't know, I'm here for that. Right?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Like I'm not saying I'm off. You know what I mean? I'm saying I don't totally have a handle on what's going on. And the show makes you feel a little dumb, to be honest. So
I can understand where you're coming from on that, but that's where I say, like, if we're left, and I'm behind you, but if we're left functionally with the same feeling we have today at the end of this show, I think that's the show has failed, not us.
All right, I'm gonna roll with that because all I know is that I didn't fail. I didn't. It's either the show or it's Tom Thibodeau. Those are the only options.
At a certain point, like, we're a couple of reasonably intelligent guys willing to go pretty far down the road with you in terms of artistic visual media. Like, if you can't make it make any kind of sense to us, I think you're not. Who are you? Who are you selling?
Indeed. Fair enough. I dare say we're going to pay more attention than many.
Exactly.
All right.
Our audience is niche enough. Like, if you're going further niche than us, then who cares?
Let's talk about a show that, to me, doesn't seem niche in any way. It seems pitched to a broad number of people, and that's The Rest of Ozark. Did you finish up the show?
Uh-huh.
I'm here for this show, man. It's just so much fun, and I wish there were 12 more episodes right now.
100% agree. The number one thing I feel I should say at this point is, like, I'm not changing my overall position because it never was about her abilities, but I think I got to say, like, both apologies and all praises due to the great Laura Linney, who, I don't know if she became the main character, but she definitely took a particular narrative. Her narrative arc is in many ways the show.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's we compare the show a lot to Breaking Bad.
She's Breaking Bad, not him.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and that's sort of the difference between her and the Skyler character, but I feel like it's sort of the same thing in terms of you meet her and you feel like, or maybe it's you've been conditioned to sort of believe that she's going to be just sort of the wet blanket wife character, and then you
right.
You come to understand that she has a depth and a toughness and a guile and intelligence that stands toe to toe with anyone else on the show.
Well, and what you really learn, if this season had her character arc this season, which felt to me like the heart of the show, was what she's also got is a taste for blood.
Yeah, she does.
And that like the feeling of that emerging. The understanding of that emerging for me over the course of the season was one of the most thrilling parts of this season, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, these two have now broken bad, right?
Oh, you know
what I mean? Like,
well, I think to some degree, like, they were already bad, right?
Yeah.
But what's interesting is the way their personalities and behaviors and everything have changed or adapted with the sort of forcible, not realization, but like with the fact that they're bad being constantly forced upon them on a not just daily but like minute to minute basis.
Yeah,
right? Because they went from like being tacitly bad to being like actively bad all the time.
Right. And I feel like, you know, and this is heavy spoilers, but we're at the end of the show, so we're just doing it. You know, once Jason Bateman decides that, or Marty decides that accepts that they're not leaving, like.
Right.
They're done. That was his last chance to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Irrevocably broken before that, but now it is we all understand it. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's maybe gone from something sort of closer to Breaking Bad to something sort of closer to The Sopranos, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it's like, these are bad guys. They have the emotions and behaviors and relationships of normal people.
Yeah. Well, and it was moving, you know, churning through plot so much faster than Breaking Bad. It almost had to be that, or the show sort of collapses in upon itself. I'm less worried about that. That was my big fear when last we spoke about that.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm a little less worried about it than I was before, but I'm not worried about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because, man, a lot of stuff happens, like, all the
time. Well, but how many seasons did Breaking Bad end up being?
That is like an eight? Excellent question. I think it's less than eight. I want to say seven. There was also, you know, AMC did that thing where they...
Where they're splitting up seasons.
Yeah, and so it's a little bit loose on the definition.
But, like, let's even say it's six. I think there's a real good chance this doesn't make it six. I don't know that there's any reason this should be a six-season show.
Yeah, I know. I shudder a little bit to think about what it would be like during the five seasons of Breaking Bad per Wikipedia, by the way.
How many?
Five seasons of Breaking Bad per Wikipedia.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, it feels longer than that. But either way, if this is three or four and out, I don't think anyone will be too pissed off, right?
No, I mean,
I think that's about right, and it'll be an enjoyable piece of thing that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it being four and being pissed off that there wasn't a fifth. So maybe I'm just undercutting my argument.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's a possibility if it maintains this level of entertainment that whenever it goes away, we'll be sad. But that doesn't necessarily mean we'll be like, there was so much story left to tell. We'll just be like, this fun thing is leaving.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's a little bit weird to me, like just reading critical reaction to the show, that they don't, not everybody loves this. And maybe it's just the thing where it's not for everybody. I don't know.
Well, I get that it's not for everybody.
It's so nakedly entertaining. And I love every character in the show.
But what I don't totally get is this response, the idea that, well, it's, yeah, it is entertaining, but like, come on, it's like all over the top and there's not much to it. I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Sure, it's somewhat over the top, but like, this is where I trot out my old line of, yeah, it's a little bit extreme that all this stuff is happening to these people, but you know, there are a lot of people who this stuff doesn't happen to, and I call them the people that we don't make TV shows about.
Right. And I dare say that if there's anybody who it does happen to, like that exists in the real world, it's someone who is working for a Mexican drug cartel. I feel like that is an occupation where a lot of over-the-top things might happen in your life.
I mean, it's no more over-the-top in that way than something like Better Call Saul.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's quite the equal of Better Call Saul. It definitely is something closer to pulpy entertainment than Better Call Saul. But at the same time, I don't think it's nearly as cheap as a lot of critical response to this season in particular seems to suggest.
Yeah. By the way, Better Call Saul just continue to chug along.
And, I'm one episode behind, so no spoilers.
It'd be really excellent. And people should be talking about that show just more in the way that we, you know, and maybe it'll be a thing like, because Breaking Bad was not a show people talked about for a long time.
Yeah.
So maybe Netflix will save it. I don't know. If you haven't gotten into, watch it on Netflix. Please.
Maybe this is the season that, like, when it ends, people go, you know, actually, guys, this season was crazy and super entertaining and action-packed, and we should be excited about it.
Yeah.
Because I do think there's, like, it's been slowly building, but I do feel like there was a jump in terms of, like, action this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. There's you know, when we're getting more into... We're getting closer to Criminal Activity, but we're not here to talk about Better Call Saul, because we'll get to that. We'll get to that, right?
Love Huel.
Sorry, you're cutting out. Say that again.
I said Huel's back. Love Huel.
Yeah. There's a lot of Huel in the next episode.
Excellent. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump to The Predator, also action-packed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think my response to this is semi-predictable, so I'd like to hear what you think.
I wrote down a lot of things here.
Okay.
I'll start with, if you think an alien taking a severed arm and throwing a thumbs up is like a good gag, this is your movie. Is what I would say. You know what I mean? Like, if you're...
Yeah.
If you're all in on the winking action parody of it all, then it's hitting all the right notes for.
I don't know if I would say parody.
Yeah, parody's maybe the wrong word, but like.
Yeah. Action comedy. It's an action comedy.
Yeah.
It's a Shane Black film, fundamentally.
I found it a little light on both. Maybe not light on action, but like, I didn't love this movie. It's weird that it's a Shane Black movie because at times, like, it's just very telegraphy and ham-handed in a way that almost like a script written by a committee would be, you know?
I will say this, and I wonder if it's because maybe the script was sort of committed at some point just because of the size of the movie, because I gotta believe this is about as big a budget or property. I guess he did an Iron Man, though.
Yeah.
But Iron Man was already silly. You know, like it's sort of a weird pairing because The Predator, although laughed at in retrospect, was very self-serious.
Yes.
And Shane Black is not. And look, I am a huge Shane Black fan, only moderately deterred by recent revelations of who he's friends with. And in many ways, this is exactly a Shane Black movie, but it's sort of the most average, big studio seeming version of it, and that doesn't work great. Like, the great Shane Black movies for me, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Long Kiss Goodnight, Last Boy Scout, they succeed in part because they're the irreverence is sort of earned through a lack of being the predator, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
that's the Robert Downey Jr. singing detective and, movie? Is that right?
And Val Kilmer.
Okay. Yeah, I did not see that. I have not.
Oh, that's super enjoyable.
I have. I did see The Nice Guys. Didn't care for
it. Yeah.
Did not see Iron Man 3. So I don't know if I'm. I don't know if I'm in on Shane Black director. I do like the last Boy Scout and The Long Kiss Goodnight, and I feel like I understand the charms of Last Action Hero, but
right.
I'm definitely not in this like cult of Shane Black that does seem to exist in certain corners.
I don't know if I would say I'm in the cult of Shane Black, but I do. I am a huge fan of action comedy as a genre. And I don't know if he has the best ones, but I did enjoy The Nice Guys. It's not great, but I enjoyed it. And I would say the same thing about The Predator. I found it funny. It's not the funniest. I thought the action was pretty cool. Not the coolest or best. But, like, you're right. If Space Monster slices arm off and gives thumbs up with it is up your alley, this is for you.
Yeah. Dudes ride a spaceship. Like, ride a spaceship, like, rodeo style.
Yeah. Briefly, but yeah. It's ridiculous. But it's, to be fair, it's a movie about a super space alien that they're defending the world from.
It's a ridiculous premise. What did you think about the performances? Because I definitely would consider myself an Olivia Munn fan. She is mugging like a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. And
there's, I feel like there's a lot of that in general. There's a lot of likable people who are just hamming the hell out of it. Thomas Jane.
Yeah, but you know what? Hers works the worst, and I think that's in part because she's given the worst character.
Yeah.
But like, I quite enjoyed Thomas Jane and what's his face, Darden. Why am I blanking on one of the most
Sterling K. Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he does it the best. He's chewing scenery, but like
he's literally chewing gum and scenery the whole film. And he's delightful. And I actually really enjoyed Thomas Jane as well. And it, like the whole goofy crew, really. Alfie Allen, like I enjoyed that. I thought they were funny and fun. Olivia Munn was the least of either of those things. And again, I don't think it's
to
her.
How they didn't bother to come up with even a vague explanation for why a clearly British guy would be in the U.S. Army?
No, did not bother with that. No, sir.
Didn't even like. Usually you get a line, you know?
I mean, yeah. That stuff I don't matter, or I don't. I'm not so bothered by. Frankly, this whole crew goes from a bunch of psychotics on a bus to saving the world from a super alien,
and they're all like best friends in 20 minutes, which is great.
Yeah, and none of that is explained, but I like it. You know, again, I enjoy the jokes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not.
And I think for the most part, people are pretty good in it.
You know, if you're looking to kill 2 hours on a Saturday, you know, maybe
have a couple laughs, watch some aliens kill stuff.
Yeah, you know, maybe ingest a few things and see this not sober. You'll have a fine time.
I saw this at the Alamo Draft House and enjoyed a boozy milkshake.
Yeah, so there you go. Did I tell you we got an Alamo Draft House? It's like it's way out in the suburbs though. I'm never
gonna. That's all right. Congratulations to you.
I know. I'm much more meh on this than you are, I think. But yeah, some of that's my taste. Look, you know what I mean? Some of it's just my taste.
Well, yeah, and that's fair. And it's not this is not a corner I want to die on. This is not a fight I want to have. because you're fundamentally you're not wrong. It's just it can be kind of a silly, fun, enjoyable thing if it's the sort of thing you're into.
Yeah, you're right. I would say that's the best way to couch this movie. If that's what you're into, is the best way to couch this movie for sure.
Yeah, like if you saw Shane Black Predator film and watched the preview and thought that's my kind of thing, you're probably right.
Yeah. I have a feeling, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that if that's what you're into may also play for this Dirty Nil record.
Yeah. I suppose I can see why you'd say that.
Were you or were you not into this record?
It's fascinating that that's the way you chose to look at the record, because I'm somewhere in between. I don't know. I guess this is a record that I see the appeal of and have a pretty good amount of respect for.
But you're not that into it.
What?
But you're not that into it because it's not what you're into, right?
Well, I even kind of enjoy it. And it is maybe like a version of a thing that I've been into at times. Because, like, I feel like there's major channeling of 90s rock music here.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of that. You know, I'd say a little some 80s rock. Obviously, there's a 80s Metallica cover at the end of the record. There is, like, to me, this fits right in with a certain thing that Canadians do well, that sort of ragtag Japan droidsy, heavy, spirited, also a little bit ragged kind of rock and roll. You know what I mean?
Right, and it. I'm trying to interpret my sort of gut response to this. I listened to it a few times actually, and I think maybe the correct interpretation is something like, I'm interested in their next album. Because there is a samey feel to this.
Yeah. But it's also much like the Mitski record, right? It's a lot. It's quick, right? You know, it's a lot of 2.5-3 minute songs.
Yes, but unlike the Mitski record, very few of the songs seem distinct in a meaningful way.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not that they're not good or original or fundamentally different, but like there is a definite sound. And I think there's more sound than any single throughout this album.
I would go full. I would say that's fair, and I would say I would even go further in that I think there's a definite sound and a definite vibe. You know what I mean?
Or
mood that proliferates throughout.
And I'm interested in that vibe, and I'm you know, I like to rock hard, and I'm super down with how hard they're rocking, and. I'm also down with a unique voice, and I don't need everything to be pitch perfect. So I'm not opposed to the guy's voice, but maybe they're like an ingredient short or the wrong producer, or because like it was, it's not that I didn't enjoy it or that I didn't think it was any good, but if it didn't come on somewhere or someone didn't ask me to, I'm not sure I'd ever listen to this album again.
Yeah. See, now I think you may have hit on something there. Put my work hat on here for a second in that, you know, this record is sort of floating around radio right now. And I think there's something really good and exciting about this band. I really like sort of the rawness and the sound and the talent. I'm just not sure the song is there for them yet. And you, I think you sort of hit on that a second ago with the mood and the vibe. And, you know, it's hard to point to that one song that's like everything came together on this one. I like Pain of Infinity a lot, but I probably a little bit too ragged for the masses.
I think that can be a good thing for a band. Like, it's pretty obvious this is not an album made with a thought towards a single.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
And to put to I guess this is essentially not a first effort, but a first major effort. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly the first effort that seems to be reaching wider people. The last record was called Minimum R&B, which I think is just a fantastic album title. And I think, you know, in terms of, I think it frames the band well, because I think a lot of what they're doing doesn't necessarily sound like The Who, but it invokes a lot of that same spirit of that early Who, of like, you know, a couple of kids.
Yeah, you know what?
There's garage, this. You know,
if I was gonna describe this like vibe we're talking about, I would say it's like there's elements of The Who, but also like the White Stripes, and like there's this moment as the record begins, the album, where it's like for a split second before it really gets into the melody of the first track, where I was like, oh man, is this going to be like friggin' Pantera metal right now? Because it just like they come out of the gates with this burst of noise and energy that's like, whoa! But then it does settle into like, it is melodic. There's more to it for me than just like, you know, thrash metal or whatever. Right. That's not my thing. But there's that moment right at the start of the record where it's like, oh man, this really rocks hard. And I love a good hard rock and melodic thing. It's just, yeah, like you said, there's really no single here, and they maybe feel like they're not. I feel like you're looking at a really great AAA prospect or something.
Yeah, I think that is that's a good way to put it. I really love the vibe of this record. Like, it's just kind of my vibe. I think this band is really cool, and I think they have something, but I would not, it's hard for me to refute any of the criticism you've had of it at this point. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, it just doesn't quite all come together in a way that's a little hard for me to put my finger on. And I suspect it has to do with the songwriting.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's the songwriting, maybe it's production, maybe it's just, you know, X number of years of playing together. It's hard to say exactly what it is, but this definitely has a, we'll look back at where they started and be like, wow, look at how far they've come sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, this could be, you know, it's not on this level, but relatively speaking, this could be a Pablo Honey, right? Where it's like, there's no fake plastic trees, but like, I don't know. A lot of people, certainly, myself included, look back at Pablo Honey as like, oh, all the pieces were in place, but it didn't quite work out there.
I see what you mean. Pablo Honey was like that band went so many places after.
But radio was different, and they're one of the best bands of all time, and I understand I'm making an unrealistic comparison. I'm just saying, from like a, where I feel like this may, or at least hope this may, fit in the arc of this band, if things go well, is as like that first album where they started to figure it out and you could hear some things in the sound, but it was the next album that was really like,
where
oh, shit.
Came together. Yeah, that's right. Fair. I think it's worth checking out. I don't...
It's the sort of album that you should listen to this and then make a note of the band name, The Dirty Nil, and like, when you see their next album announced, be like, oh, yeah, these guys were interesting.
Yeah, and I'm going to further that and say I'm going to check them out live because I'd like to see.
Well, I bet that'll be a fun time. Bring your earplugs.
That could be another level. Yes, yeah, so definitely bring your earplugs. All right, let's get to homework because we got to get going.
I failed to prepare, but I do believe there is one important thing happening this week.
Okay. Is it the return of The Good Place?
It sure is.
Nailed it. All right, so we should definitely cover that. I'm excited for that. I have a homework assignment that is just essentially make another homework assignment.
Murphy Brown. Just kidding. What is it?
Well, potentially it could be Murphy Brown. So this is the week. It seems like, you know, the broadcast networks are delivering their offerings.
They're back.
And I think for homework, we should try to find, and who knows, maybe wind up being the same show, But we should try to find one broadcast offering that we each think seems like has the potential to check out, and then we can watch that for the following week.
Oof. Oh, for the okay. So we're not going to watch it this week. We're going to
this is your
see
week.
What debuts.
This is your week to scout it out, and then we'll watch it next week. And then I'm going to throw in the FX show Mr. Irrelevant, I believe is the name of it.
What's that about? Is it about the last pick in the NFL draft?
It's about a hitman. It's an Australian show about a hitman that I've heard is quite good. And, you know, I'm generally trusting of FX's oeuvre. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I love
sorry.
FX.
It's Mr. In Between. That's the name of the show.
Oh, also, we will be reconvened. Yeah. Insecure season finale on Sunday.
That's exciting. Yeah. So we may talk about the season of Insecure as it's going. I think we're all going to watch that anyway. Yeah. Mr. In Between. Sorry. And that actually premiered last night. So find it on demand.
Sounds good.
All right.
Okay. We'll have preseason basketball to break down as well. Can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be fun. It'll be our first look at LeBron's new uniform from the bench.
Oh, his shorts seemed short. That's my early take. All right, I'm going to go now. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.